I'd grown up in the suburbs in the West, and there was the illusion of safety and stability, and we had a kind of story that we told of ourselves about who we are. And what a shock it was to end up in Louisiana where, you know, all the stories were just blatantly tragic all around me. And it was such a head trip. And as a young rubbernecker and daydreamer and fiction writer, I was in a weird kind of heaven there. I was in a state with the most teen pregnancies, with the highest percentage of the adult population incarcerated, highest illiteracy. It was the most litigious. And then there were all these ones where they were lucky to escape, like most heart attacks because Wisconsin was number one. And there were this whole list of things that luckily only Mississippi was the worst at. So they were 49th in the union. And well, I would see people in the grocery store in South Louisiana, and I would say, "How's it going?" And, you know, they would sit your ass down and they would tell you. They would tell you long tales of woe about their body problems and about cancer. Everyone seemed to talk about cancer. And I just kind of, I just reveled in all these stories. And I think the main thing was that I didn't really understand that these were tragedies and that they were happening to real people. And like, that was the goal of my writing, was to understand and maybe say such things.
To understand real people.
Understand real people and at least try to fake real emotions like the ones I wasn't noticing around me. But I taught a creative writing class. I was very new, and I kind of knew the basics, what point of view was and perspective. And I knew you started a new paragraph whenever you had a new speaker in dialogue. And I had a class, and it was interesting that a lot of my students had unbelievable, amazing stories to tell. I mean, this is a state where there were hunting accidents and car crashes and weird bankruptcies and corruption deals, and everyone was interconnected. And I was just always encouraging my students to tell these amazing stories. They would come to me, they would say, "Mr. Johnson, I don't know what to write for my short story, you know. By the way, I won't be in class Monday because my dad has his, you know, bail hearing and, you know, and I wrecked my car." I was always trying to get students to write about these things that mattered to them and to maybe look closely at what was around them. And weirdly, they didn't judge these stories as objects of interest. And perhaps it was social, like maybe you didn't necessarily talk about this to strangers or record them in a formal way, or maybe you shouldn't look too closely at your stories. Here at Stanford, the biggest transgress, the great fear is, you know, being overstated. And they're always trying to understate things constantly. And subtlety is one of the highest marks of success. And so we're all trying to, I see my students write a lot of very quiet stories in which things may or may not have happened.
Snow is falling.
Exactly. Snow fell. And so I try to encourage my students to use these stories around them. I had this student, you know, I'll call him Ricky. I think he needs a last name for the story. Ricky Stamper. I'll call him Ricky Stamper.
Ricky Stamper, okay.
But I don't think that's too far from his real name. And he was kind of a quiet student. The school was close to the border of Texas, and he was one of the students who drove over from East Texas. And we all turned our stories in, and he turned in a story. It was very interesting. It was about a young man, and he's driving a pickup truck in East Texas. And in the story, he has a young woman with him who has a new dress on. And they're driving a truck. They're having a discussion about where they're going. But the story doesn't quite know where to start. It starts with them in the truck, and then it kind of backs up to that morning where maybe they're arguing, or maybe it's the morning before. And then it kind of backs up to some veiled incident that happened in the past. But as they're talking and driving, he keeps thinking back to very vague, this vague argument that he's had. And it's not quite clear what's happened, but it's troubling him. And it keeps coming back. And there's a man in the story. There's a man in the story. And the girl's talking. And suddenly, there's a man on the side of the road in Texas. And I remember Ricky had a couple phrases he used. I'll never forget. One of them was, he said, out of the blues, he saw him.
Out of the blues.
Out of the blues.
Not out of the blue.
And I remember he said he saw a guy walking by a bow wire fence, B-O-W. instead of barbed wire. I never really asked Ricky about it. I never had a chance to. Suddenly, he swerves the pickup to the side of the road. Ricky grabs something very quickly from under the seat that he's got, and the young woman with him is yelling, "Go, go, go!" You can't tell whether she's saying, "Let's leave, let's get out of here," or get him," you know. Outside of the truck, everything's really kind of a blur. There's some things are yelled, but there's no dialogue tags. So you can't really say who's yelling what, and it's kind of not quite first person anymore. It's kind of third person suddenly. There was a first person reference, and I yelled at him to do something, but my neck was pressed against the tailgate, and suddenly you realize they're in combat. And vague things happened. There are actions. We're in the passive voice. We're not sure the point of view. Suddenly, Ricky jumps back in his truck. He tries to put the stick shift in gear, but he can't because he has this thing in his hand. It's clearly a tire iron, and when he tries to let go of it, his hand won't let go. It's clenched into his hand. The woman in the truck yells at him to get rid of that thing because of her dress, which may or may not be a wedding dress, some people felt. And he throws it out the window, and they drive away, and they start talking, and then the story ends abruptly.
No sense of motivation or even what the action was.
No.
No.
No. In class, the students really, really went after it. People were like, are they going to a wedding or not? Is this a relationship story? And people were like, did he get into a fight? If so, I need to see the blood. And I want to know what he's thinking when he hits him with the tire iron. I don't think it was a tire iron. I think that was an old friend, the one in the flashback. There was all this kind of conversation about what this story meant or might not mean. And Ricky the whole time was sitting there. And he was kind of a quiet, observant student, and he wasn't writing anything down, which is always a very bad sign as a teacher. It means he has other motivations than rewriting the story and making it its best possible story. And he was kind of withdrawn, yet watchful about the whole process. Didn't make any strange signs. Afterwards, I think we ended up with some very banal advice. We should take the fight out. That's a different story. There are two stories, Ricky. That's always a sign I know I'm in trouble when we decide there are two stories in it. We should maybe get in her perspective, and they should get where they're going, and whatever the class decided, I kind of went with. And we scheduled a conference, and I remember I tried to talk to Ricky to kind of get a sense of what his experience of that class was. Your first workshop can be a little startling. He didn't show up for his workshop. And then he didn't really, I think he came again once or twice, but he never participated, and then he disappeared. And I just forgot about Ricky Stamper. I was in my office about a month later, and I had a very small little office. It wasn't a cubicle, but it was a very tiny office. And I turned around, and there were two guys with ties on, and they introduced themselves as detectives from the state of Texas. And they asked me if I knew Ricky Stamper. And I said, would this have to do with anyone getting beat to death by the side of the road with a tire iron in Texas?
You said that to the detectives? Did you suspect something?
Well, it suddenly just kind of came clear to me, and they just kind of lifted their eyebrows, and I knew I was right. And maybe something was troubling me about the degree to which I had understood the story. Now I can see that story has all the kind of hallmarks of a trauma narrative that can't find the place where the story begins. When a story revolves around trauma, where does it start? Does it start when the car crash happens? Does it start afterwards? Does it start in that morning when you forget to brush your teeth, when you got in a fight with a parent the week before? The actual center of it is vague and can't be looked at, especially without reliving the pain. And now I would see all the marks of a very personal story.
There's something about the detail of being unable to let the tire iron go. It seems very authentic and very powerful and creepy.
I don't think it could be faked. It's one of those things you wouldn't know unless you were there.
Yeah.
One of the things I try to teach my students The story, you know, was seemed very bad as a short story, but also a little unnerving in a very genuine way. And so these two detectives raised their eyebrows, and they asked me a couple very banal questions, I thought. Did he ever do anything suspicious? Who did he hang out with? Did he ever come see you in your office hours? And I didn't really have anything to offer them. But then I said, you know, he did write this short story that describes killing someone on the side of the road. And they were very interested in that. And I went to a file, and I had his story there, and I plucked it out. I handed it to them. And they seemed very excited about it, and they turned and they walked away. And in that moment, I kind of felt like, you know, an important cog in like a mysterious machine. You know, like this was a murder. And here I was, I played a critical role. I would have been like an interesting scene from the detective's point of view if it was put into a TV show.
A Law and Order version of events, right?
Yeah, I was kind of excited, like, hey, I was going to go tell other people about it. You won't believe what happened to me in my class and this interesting thing happened. But as you know, time went by, I looked back on that moment and got a weird sense of dread about it that, you know, I had tried to make a class in which people could tell their stories. And here someone had done exactly what I had hoped for and at great personal risk. And I had taken that story and used it against him in some way. You know, that was his story, not mine to give. And I think that that turned out to be like the antithesis of what I thought my credo should be as a teacher. Not to give evidence against the storytellers on the story. I had to stop and think about what I really believed in and what I was advocating for these people. And it was larger than that. It was kind of like a welcome to Louisiana. You know, this isn't tourism. Sure, this is all interesting and fascinating. But it's not just something to be rubbernecked and saved as a good story.
No, absolutely. I would imagine then maybe one of the reasons that the students didn't think to write about these things was that it was their life. They didn't come to their experience as a short story, or they didn't experience their own suffering in that way.
Or maybe they were afraid their teacher would use it against them in a court of law.
And what happened to Ricky?
Never heard from him again.
Or back from the detectives?
The detectives weren't into revealing anything to me. They just wanted to see if he had been a student, had he attended class, could I point them toward anyone else? And the truth was that I couldn't. And, you know, I didn't know anything about my student. You know, he hadn't come to my conference, which is usually when I kind of try to get to know someone. But it's just ask them to tell me a story that mattered, and they necessarily hadn't mattered to me, at least at that point.
And they took his story with them.
They took his story with them, and I regret that because I wanted to read that and think about that story more, and about every time he came close to revealing something painful in that story, it moved sideways, it moved backward, it kind of did a crab walk over here and there, and because suddenly it was real, or probably real, or had a chance of being real. I had an opportunity to learn about something that truly mattered to the person and not just the story.
Did it change the way that you approached teaching?
Well, it was a wake-up call, I think mostly in that I understood that I was always after the ideal story. The well-crafted piece, something that really rang and sang and had a thrumming effect for me. And I still enjoy stories like that, that just show the master's hand at work. But now, especially now that I'm a father, it's the stories built around risk and loss that break my heart. And I admire those stories, but those aren't the ones I'm trying to write anymore. I think I'm trying to maybe do what Ricky did. And I feel like I would rather write the story that Ricky wrote and fail than to write that kind of perfect story that makes you go, at the end, and then you kind of forget about. Because I've thought about his story many times over. It's interesting, you know, someone comes in, really only has like other than maybe reading a couple exercises, only has like one encounter with the class and tells this story. I mean, I guess I'm assuming it's true. The detectives really kind of convinced me that someone had been killed and they believed Ricky had done it. And someone told the story of perhaps killing someone. Maybe it's easier to tell your story to a stranger. I got to say, you know, I have thought about what those detectives made of that story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we were in a class that was centered on storytelling and applied all the skills we'd learned from our textbook and from the sage advice of their teacher to stories. But, of course, everything was based on the principle that this is all fiction.
Right, make believe. Of course.
And so these detectives must have thought this was confession of some sort. And, you know, maybe they read confessions regularly, and I'm sure confessions could probably be as messy as the one that we read.